you actually have had some inadvertent experience with Neighborhood Public Radio before with your movie, Mission Movie. You guys had a whole day of broadcasting centered around the movie.
Yeah, that was so cool. I wasn't there. I was out of the country or something.
It was an excellent day. It was very, very exciting.
And Tom Amiano and what's his name? Just clips and everyone was grooving. And so kudos to you. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, it was hot, and we have the files up on our archive to this day.
Yes, and I've gone to try to listen to them and kind of couldn't anyway.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that later. Anyway. But in addition to the Mission movie, which was a pretty huge success, you are also responsible in many ways for ATA still being around, right?
I was one of the co-founders of ATA back in the 1984, that would be.
1984.
I was about 7 years old and I had this vision of a media arts center.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, I was actually 21 or whatever it was, but...
You can have visions at 21.
Yeah, no, I was one of the co-founders of ATA back in the day. And
where that wasn't in this space, was it?
No, it was South of Market.
Okay.
And we... I went on vacation. See, I should never leave town. All these amazing things happen. I left town. I went to L.A. for a week, and the fellows I left in charge of ATA managed to burn it down.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And when was that?
1982.
Okay.
And then, so it was burnt down, and then I moved to the Mission. Oh, no, that's a lie. It was 1984 or 5.
Okay.
Because then I moved to the Mission, found a warehouse, and then everything galvanized, and all of a sudden, ATA was in my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. From 1986 to 87, ATA actually was in my house. And then that was a real motivation for me to find a home for ATA.
So there's been a long history of ATA being not only an artist center, but also a place where people live.
Oh, yeah. Always. Well, because we didn't know how to make money, so you had to actually pay rent to keep the space going. And to this day, as you know. Mm-hmm. But don't tell the authorities.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I'm just making things
people
up.
People live here? Who lives here? Would that be Kent Howie and Greg Hall?
I don't know anything about it. Anyway, so what was the space like? I mean, what was the vision when the space first began?
Like, what? South of Market or here?
Well, I guess starting with South of Market, and then we
can
move on.
My personal motivation for ATA was I was a undergraduate student studying broadcasting at San Francisco State University, and I knew there was something better than broadcasting. So I started making, unbeknownst to me, video art, which I found out later was video art. And started hanging out with the cool kids in town, and they all came from the San Francisco Art Institute. And there were all these amazing, mostly male video artists, and I started hanging out with them, and they realized I was running the gallery at San Francisco State University. They got smart and realized I had administration skills. I had made a compelling first video. And this is a condensed, unfair version, but... Basically, I got to screen my work for helping them become a nonprofit and run a business for them. Before it was ATA, it was a little for-profit concept gallery South of Market back in the booming 80s when art was a commodity.
Right.
And it soon became clear that wasn't going to work, and then there was this idea about becoming a nonprofit space and supplying editing facilities. Check this out. In 1982 or 3... It's $15 an hour to edit cut-only VHS editing.
Not at ATA, like somewhere else?
It was the first ATA editing suite.
Okay.
It's $15 an hour now to edit in full-blown.
Right,
I mean, so you get
You can do it all on a laptop now.
Yeah, you own that stuff. So, that's what it was. It was apples and oranges. But ATA, even from that, and I had nothing to do with that first idea, but that first editing suite was how people could get access to the facilities because you couldn't make video back in those days unless you really... got your resources together. Then I came in with my nascent ideas about, like, power to the people, making media, female administrator, subservient bullshit. And next thing I knew, I was a co-founder.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you really had it in mind as sort of an alternative media space, a real...
Oh, like I had nothing in mind. I was 21 years old.
You can have things in mind.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, perhaps.
Well, that's
and
a start.
And it was nascent. Mm-hmm. We can look back and I can say that that's what motivated me, but at the time, Yes, it was a kind of gut feeling that there needed to be some kind of democracy around media.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And but do you feel that? I guess I'm asking a lot of which came first kinds of questions. But I mean, do you feel like as you grew, ATA grew with you, or I mean, because it does seem like.
Well, yeah, I mean, that happens with all organizations. Yeah. You do NPR. It's growing with you.
Well, no, it grows totally independent.
That's right. You create this thing, and it gets its own legs, and it does its own thing.
Yeah.
Hence, I haven't actually been formally connected to ATA. I haven't worked hard for ATA in, I don't know, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still an associate. I'm on their advisory board, and when I'm available, I have time because I love this place, but... No, this place, because it's a good idea. And that wasn't just my idea. It was a group of us in the early 80s saying, well, fuck, there's no place to make independent media, and what are we going to do? We're like, let's make a clubhouse where we can jack off and, like, you know, make weird shit.
So now that you come back to it, do you still feel like your DNA embedded into it somehow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I walked in tonight in this weird scene right here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it's so funky in ATA, and kind of they're weirdos, and they're young dreamers, and it's too white. And
mm-hmm.
I was just at the intersection party down the street.
Right. A little different?
Yeah, really multicultural, really mixed. I mean, that's been their agenda. ATA was always a white kids clubhouse, but someone had to make alternative media okay, and this place has. And I remember people telling me in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was trying to, like, rethink media, like, well, you know, anyone walks down the street and doesn't think they can enter because it's like a cult house. I mean, it is like a cult house, and it's still like that, but it's important. And, you know, I think testament to the fact that it's still here. Not I think, I know.
Right.
That it is important. And it, you know.
Well, I mean, you can, any organization is going to have its critics or have
people
something.
People don't criticize ATA much. They just ignore it.
And I guess that's the biggest compliment you can give.
In a way, because no one's damned it. No one said go away. And there's been enough support to keep it going. And visionaries keep popping up, like Kathleen and Gilbert. I mean, they're here.
Kathleen and Gilbert have been amazing. They're
unbelievable.
Yeah. So.
And then Kent and Farah. And, I mean, just all those visions of housing alternative media.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can critique it. And you can say why it's not working, why it's... But it is so important. I mean,
but somehow it continues.
It's it feels ineffable, but really, if you could break it down, you could easily write an essay about why it's important.
Sure. Oh, you can always. There are a lot of important things that don't survive, and I think, I guess, sort of what I'm getting at is how important it is for the community to sort of step up and say that they support. You know, to show their support for an organization like this, to not rely on...
Absolutely. But then if you want to stay underground or marginalized, you only get certain kinds of support. I mean, I'm old enough to know how all that kind of shit works.
Sure.
I'm dancing with the devil a lot more than I used to. I had very strict values and standards, and there were things I wouldn't do and money I wouldn't take, and ATA is still like that, and it's great because it does provide this... space that people can do things that you can't do when you're compromising. It doesn't compromise.
Right. That's.
I'm compromised, but this place isn't.
I think we all compromise in our various ways, but I agree. You know, ATA's done an amazing job of being very steady through the years. And you don't know what you're going to get when you come in, but you always know, I think Eric Davis said earlier, you always know you're going to have your boundaries pushed.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for coming back. What are you working on right now? I heard something about a Steve Kurtz documentary or something.
You know about Steve Kurtz?
Oh, yeah. I interviewed Beatrice DaCosta way back right after it happened. And actually, Neighborhood Public Radio, we were just in Serbia at CUDA space in Novi Sad. And they couldn't stop talking about Critical Art Ensemble and how great it was to have Steve there and the whole group. So, I'd consider myself a fan. And
an expert.
Not an expert. I would not consider myself an expert.
But you know the case, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm assistant directing and producing a film about Steve Kurtz with Lynn Hirschman right now that he stars in along with his co-star, Thomas J. Ryan, who's like a fuck-off SAG famous actor. It's kind of... We're doing a sneak peek at Sundance.
Oh, really?
I am so compromised.
But so is this a narrative project or a documentary?
It's a hybrid. It's narrative and documentary.
Oh, wow. That sounds very
exciting. I've
been
working on it for the last year, yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't we just quickly, just because I realize I got so excited talking about it, we didn't talk about what exactly happened with Steve Kurtz.
Still pending.
Yeah. He was pulled out. His wife died, and while he's still mourning, they took the body of his wife away from him and held it
for autopsy.
For autopsy and other things, and now he's accused of mail fraud and all these things.
Do you really want the whole story?
I don't know if we want the whole story. I was thinking maybe you had a 5-minute pitch or something.
Well, the pitch is it's a complete violation, potential violation. It's a cautionary tale of our times that the government is using Steve Kurtz as an example and an icon of a way to chip away at our civil liberties. And it's on academic freedom rights, artistic rights, freedom of expression, all the rest of it. They're trying to turn a civil case into a criminal case, which would change the laws in America in our lifetime. Because if you look at the history of how these laws flip-flop and how civil liberties are gained and lost, it's gone, you know, ever since America's been founding, it's gone back and forth. But right now we're at a very critical time. And the Steve Kurtz case, the reason he's picked out, because they know he's not a bioterrorist. They know he's not trying to create weapons of mass destruction.
Obviously.
But they're still trying to prove that he has, because he's a smart-ass professor who's written critical books, who's done critical work about biotechnology and the government, because he's established and famous, because he and his wife are a great team. They're ripping him apart. Mm-hmm. And it basically takes the impact of potential criminal cases down to the civil level, which would impact all of us. And we actually have a quote in the movie where he just goes off, and there's like 5 primary points. Everything from freedom of expression to gay marriage. They want to have the ability to go on and rip people like you and me apart. So he's a test case. He's our guinea pig, and that's why we're making the movie. Yeah.
And a great emblem as well.
Yeah. And he's, fortunately, he's a really great interview.
That's awesome. So, and a great touchstone, because he's somebody that you're working on a film about. It's Critical Art Ensemble has had a great relationship with ATA in general.
In fact, Craig Baldwin turned me on to Critical Art Ensemble when I was teaching graduate art classes at San Francisco State University. So, yeah, this world's about... But
awesome.
Also very big.
Yeah. It will, and very important.
I hope
that's
so.
What we say.
Well, I know so.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. Anyway, we really appreciate having you. We loved working with you back at Southern Exposure, or at least with the Mission movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, and I'm working on a new film myself about depression.
About depression?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, hold on. We got to talk about that a little bit then. Is it about medication or is it about...
It's a fictionalization of story of... It follows the legacy of depression over 3 generations of a California family. And it looks at depression as a cultural phenomenon and an individual phenomenon in America. But it also considers it as something that's produced by society and something that we inherit, and how do you deal with it? It's set in the Salton Sea, which is in Southern California, which is literally a depression in a land that's been filled up by fresh water over 100 years ago, which has become incredibly toxic. But people live around it and are in denial. So this is a great metaphor about, I mean, here we are in this apparent plenty, and we're dying. We're dying of...
Well, in a world of plenty, so much depression. Depression is so prevalent in our society. What's that all about?
It's pretty fucked up. It's intense shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to talk to you about just that at some point.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll scribble down some numbers or something.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you, Lisa. It's been great talking with you. And again, we have lots of ways that you can give money to ATA. Just call and ask. You can be an alternative, a punk, a renegade, an outlaw, and apparently a mountain lion. So, Anyway, we're going to bring...
Or an Enid dog. You can be an Enid dog, too.
Okay. Woo! All right, let's go back to some music, and we're going to have a band pretty soon. We'll be back in just a moment.